Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
To Liveline. Just a health warning, please. If anyone has children with them at the moment, young children, I think primary school children, they're still in school, a lot of them going home at the moment, or a lot of them just arrived in the door demanding cheese strings and various other yogurts and various other things. We will be discussing in a few minutes a very serious issue that affects men, and it is a rare condition, thankfully, but not for those 25 or 30 men in Ireland every year who get it, and it is about the male anatomy. So I'm very conscious that young ears listening will spend the rest of the day either worrying if they hear it or asking you questions which you will not be able to answer unless you're a consultant. So if you can, and I hate saying this, it's Liveline, but if you can, would you give it just 5 minutes? If you can listen on your own, well and good, and then decide if you want your younger children to listen to it, especially primary school children, and it's up to you, but my sense is that it's the children would at least be in second level before they can listen to such a difficult topic. Couple, if any results come in, we're in the 14th count in Dublin, so it's going to move on fairly quickly. It's on the 15th count now, still on the 4th count in Ireland South, and it's on the 5th count in Midlands Northwest. But if any more results come in, we will of course bring them to you. And just another little bit of housekeeping, we're here all summer. joe@rte.ie, scribble it somewhere, though it's fairly easy to remember. If you are, anything happens on the holidays that you think other people should know about, or indeed we can help, well then just drop us a quick email. And on August the 2nd we will be in Carlow, in the Dolman Hotel in Carlow, for Funny Friday. And I see the Pope has stolen the idea from under our eyes after we had that serious discussion. And it was a very serious discussion last week about what he called the phrase he used when he was talking about people who are gay. But the Pope is now doing his own Funny Friday this Friday in the Vatican, and he's invited comedians from all over the world to come and sing his praises. And I'm sure they will, and they'll find the whole thing, as a lot of people who visit the Vatican and the papal apartments and addressed by the Pope, they will find it very uplifting. And maybe he will explain what he meant by using that awful word that the only time I ever heard it used was by Shane McGowan in Fairy Tale of New York, and he used it in a different context, but the word is now in the vernacular. Okay, let's go to that item I asked you to be careful about. Peter Robbie. Peter, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you? I'm glad you warned the littlies away. I would hate to give anyone nightmares, but sure. Yeah. And they should have gone by now.
This is a nightmare for you. What happened, Peter?
Yeah, well, really, first of all, can I thank you for letting me on the show, because this is kind of a public service announcement, and it's something I felt quite strongly about because of what happened to me.
Okay.
So I think maybe if I tell you the story going back, and then I'll explain why I wanted to come on the radio. I'm 67 years of age. Mm-hmm. I'm healthy, or I was healthy. I was fit. I'm not overweight. I've never smoked a cigarette in my life. And I drank the same as most Irish people, but funnily enough, gave it up more or less in the last couple of years.
Okay.
So life was good. I live with my lovely wife, who is my soulmate, and we live in Dalgety Village, which is magnificent. So life was good. I was beginning to wind down work-wise. I was taking one day off to play golf. Well, I won't say play golf, go around the golf course,
yeah,
which I was able to, I was fit enough to do. And like most men in Ireland, after the age of 50, I was always warned to go to your doctor to get checked out, to do an MOT every 6 months to a year, which I did. And I was only suffering from the usual bout of slightly enlarged prostate, which meant the odd extra trip to the bathroom. But that was being controlled by Tamsulosin, no problem. Slightly high blood pressure, which was controlled with amlodipine. So life was good. Everything was fine. Now, about a year ago, I noticed a little bit of blood in my urine. Not much, just the last few drops on the white porcelain. I said, golly, that looks a bit pink. So I examined it. Yes, a bit of blood. Mm-hmm. No problem. It's obviously some kind of urine, intestinal tract, some kind of disorder. It'll be some kind of virus or whatever. So I went to my local doctor, Connor Downs in Greystones, who, yes, he said, yes, you've got some kind of infection. So antibiotics, fine. Now, he did mention at the time that men tend not to get these kind of infections. It's more likely to be a woman gets that kind of infection, but not men. But he said, look, that should clear up. Everything should be fine, which it did. About 2 months ago, I noticed a bit of blood again. Now, I also had, the other symptom I had was, it sounds awful, but it really wasn't. I noticed a very slight discharge when I went for a pee, just sort of a bit of liquid. But really, it wasn't a problem. Mm-hmm. And I could so easy have missed it. And the only other sign that there was something wrong was when I sat in my chair in the office, I got a very slight tingling sensation in my perineal area, right between my legs, and the urge to pee. So given that and given what he said, I said, look, I better hove off to Connor and let him have a look. So I did, and he gave me the checkup and he gave me the prostate exam. Not pleasant, but listen, it has to be done. He checked the bloods and he said, yes, there's a bit of infection there. But he said, look, given what I said the last time, I think we better get you into a urologist, you see. So he mentioned Hubert Gallagher in the Beacon, and Hubert Gallagher was an ex-Greystones rugby club man. So I had a connection with him. So I said, yeah, it's great to have a connection. So I went in to see Hubert on the 16th of April, and he, very professional, gave me a bit more of a thorough examination. And he suggested that we had, and it made my blood run cold. He said, let's just put a camera down your penis and go down and have a look in your bladder and just have a look to be on the safe side. Okay. Now, I did blanch at that. The idea of it is horrifying. Yeah. But he said, no, he said, it's a very routine operation. It's not even an operation. It's a very routine procedure. It happens many, many times a week. It's 2 minutes of unpleasantness and then it's done. So I went in on the 19th of April. And God, I'll never forget it. With the jigs and the reels, it wasn't 2 minutes. It was 10 minutes of absolute nightmare. They couldn't get the camera in. When they got the camera in, it was so painful. I was roaring, screaming. Now, I did curse a little bit. I did apologize afterwards. But then he said, about 10 minutes into this, he said, look, I think you're right. I think maybe I'll bring you back in and put you to sleep for it. So that was like heaven. You know, I said, that's fantastic. Great, do it when I'm asleep. Back on the 25th of April, put me to sleep. Did the job, you see, fantastic. I woke up in hospital and he came in. He said, look, we did have a look. He said, I think I've seen something.
Okay.
Can't tell you what it is. It looks to be fairly small, but he said, I tried to take a biopsy, but as soon as I touched this thing, it sort of blood came out. And he wasn't sure whether he'd got enough for a biopsy. But we did an MRI, we did scans, and he sent me home with a catheter down to a bag on my leg, and which was okay. I mean, it's not pleasant, but it's okay. So I went home, and he said that the reason you have the catheter is because we were poking around, in case the tubes swell and block, and then you can't urinate. That could be a problem. So it was all very. He said, "I'm sure, you know, sure everything's fine, but I'll send you home, and we wait for the results of the biopsy." So a few days later, he phoned and he said, "Look." He said, I've never seen this before. He said, I've never seen one of these before. So I think it's best if I refer you to the guy who's the top dog, Ivor Cullen. He said, he's the man who handles this type of thing. Now, I still didn't know what this type of thing was. So we went to see Ivor in the Blackrock Clinic on the 10th of May. And I brought my lovely wife, Nora, in with me. We went up to his office, sat down. Nora sitting beside me, she was confidently expecting something like a polyp or something we could get rid of with some kind of treatment. And I must confess, so was I. It was all sort of very light because the symptoms had been so slight. And Ivor said, look, tell me all about it. So I launched into my story, much as I've done with you. And then after 5 minutes, I said, well, hold on a second. This guy's the expert. He's got the results of the biopsy. He's got the results of the MRI. And he knows more about this than I do. So I stopped and I said, Ivor, I said, tell me. I said, is this serious? And he looked at me and there was a slight pause. And I think he was sort of eyeing me up and down. And he decided I was the kind of guy who wanted it straight. I don't want sugarcoating. And he said, yes, this is extremely serious. So I felt my wife stiffen beside me, and I said, okay. I said, is this survivable? And again, there was that slight pause. And then he said, I really don't know. And that's the moment where the little hairs went up in the back of my neck, you see. And I felt Nora starting to sob beside me. So he said, right. I said, is there anything you can do? And he said, yes, there is. He said, what we're going to do is we're going to get you into Beaumont as quickly as we can. You're on my urgent list. You're number six on the list.
Okay.
He said, this is a very rare tumor. It's cancer of the urethra. Now, there was a technical name for it, but essentially it is very rare. And he said, it's affected almost the entire urethra. He showed me the MRI scans. Okay. I mean, I'm looking at it. To me, this was just a big colourful thing. But he did explain, he said, look, what we'll try and do, we will operate, we will take out the urethra, which is the tube from the bladder to the end of the penis, basically. We'll remove the penis, we've no option, and we'll rejig the bladder so you can have a little tube coming out of your tummy, a suprapubic catheter, and you can have a little tap on that, you see. So I was thinking, well, I'm pragmatic. If that's what you've got to do, that's what you've got to do.
Okay.
So it happened very quickly. I saw him on the 10th of May. 20th of May, I'm into Beaumont. I'm admitted to Beaumont. I'm taken in and put on a trolley. I said goodbye to my wife, and they came in, and the surgeon said, look, you do realize that when we get in there, we may have to do an awful lot more.
Okay.
We may have to take your prostate. We may have to take the bladder. We may have to take, like, everything. So, again, what can you say? Look, you'll know when you get in, do what you have to do. I woke up in my bed in Beaumont, and I must say at this stage, the staff in Beaumont are magnificent. From the moment I was in to the moment I was out, cleaning staff, porters, cooks, doctors, nurses, fantastic. Can't fault them. So I was with them until the 29th of May. I do have a rather unpleasant looking wound on my lower abdomen, which I don't like looking at the moment, just because I don't like looking at it, right? I do have my suprapubic catheter, so I can pee through that. I went home. I feel fine, except that I've got to get this wound changed. Now, I will be going in to see him in July. We don't know what the long-term prognosis is. Nobody does. But I think we'll come up with a plan, which will probably mean radio, chemo, whatever. But my point really is that these guys, when I went to see them, my symptoms were so slight and they were bearable. They were getting worse so slowly and so slightly. I was very close to just ignoring it and just carrying on. I was living the life. I was enjoying myself. This was all bearable. This wasn't a drawback at all. And if I hadn't gone to see Conor Downes and through the chain of command up to Ivor Cullen, at this stage, I would have thought in a very short space of time when I eventually went in to see him and I'd asked the question, is there anything you can do? The answer would have been, I'm terribly sorry, there isn't. So these guys, because I started the process and went into my local GP, essentially I have now got a future. Now, I've got a line stretching from me into the future. I don't know how far it goes. Okay. I don't know what the long-term prognosis is, but I have a future. And none of us know what's in our future. Because you could go out, God love you, you could go out tomorrow and get run over by a bus, you know. So nobody knows what's going to happen. So I can assume that I have a future, we'll have a plan, and you never know. A year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. Let's find out. But the main thing is, it's to make sure that the men of Ireland, especially men of a certain age, and the women who push them, because I know that's the way it works. And men don't like talking about their waterworks, or they don't like talking about their rear end. But they're the areas that are going to leap up and bite you. So for crying out loud, will you just go to your doctor? And that's really the message, Joe.
And it's a very powerful message and very powerfully delivered, unfortunately, from someone who's been through the experience. But Peter, you mentioned that the consultant said to you before, the surgeon said to you before the operation, we're going in, we don't know what we would have to remove. What did they actually remove?
They did. That we were very lucky and they were good enough. He did mention when he showed me the MRI, he said, you see, now I didn't see it, but he said, you see, there's a little area around the urethra that looks like viable tissue. And as long as there's an area of viable tissue around a tumour or a cancer, you can cut through it and you leave healthy tissue. You remove the cancer. Yeah. Now, they were able to do exactly what they thought they were going to do. They took the urethra, they took the penis, they sort of adjusted the bladder, so I've got this little tube out. But basically, that's all they did. Now, the odd thing is, because I said to my nurse, and Alison Doran is my kind of the contact nurse who's fantastic and looks after me really very well. But I mentioned to her when I was in with her last week, I said, I can still feel, if I close my eyes, I can feel all the bits I had before in the same place. It's a bit odd. So it's this kind of ghost feeling. And I mentioned the fact, I said, I can kind of feel my testicles. Now, I'm not 100% sure about this, but I think she said, I still might have my testicles somewhere in there. They're not where they used to be, but I think they might be inside. Now, I could be wrong with that, but a friend of mine did point out, he said, if you lose your testicles, then you might have to go on all sorts of testosterone treatment.
Well, of course, yeah.
So maybe, and I could be wrong, but maybe that's what they've left. But I was very lucky that they only had to do what they thought they had to do, because I could have been scooped out entirely. I could have a bag on the front here and a bag on the front there, which would have been... It would have been another problem. The problem at the moment isn't really a problem, because it's only about peeing into a bag or peeing in through a little tap. And that, if that's all I have to worry about, for sure, it's nothing. Now, I know a lot of people would say, cutting the penis off, what about sex? What about your love life and all that? Being pragmatic, I'm 67. The days of me swinging out of a wardrobe in a Batman suit, I'm afraid, are long since past me. Okay. So if you like,
still very
it
young,
wasn't really a choice. If you're told, look, you get this done or we don't do anything and you're not going to be here in a few months. You know, what is the choice? It's not even worth thinking about. Life is very, very precious. And when you get to a certain age, the sex part of it sort of goes to the background. And what you're looking at is companionship. And I have a wife who is my soulmate, and she's looking after me so well, to the detriment of her own health, probably. But we have to keep an eye on that. But Joe, it's to make sure the men, and I was one of the men of Ireland, in as much as I ignored things and I let things go. But thanks to my wife, she bullied me, went to the doctor, and remember that your GP is the first port of call. And yes, you go to him, and yes, it costs a few bob, but it's cheaper than going out for a meal. And if they pick up on something, 90% of the time, that little thing they pick up on can be treated with medication or a tiny procedure. I was unlucky. This thing came out of the blue. No idea how these things arrive, why they arrive, where they come from. But it hit me.
And
but why not me? It wasn't unlucky.
Yeah,
it was
okay.
Just,
why not people me? Say, you know? Why me? Yeah. People say, why not me?
Exactly. Why not me? Yeah.
And Peter, when you say it to your male buddies, what's their reaction?
The reaction has been brilliant. I mean, they're looking at me. If you saw me now, there's nothing wrong with me. Okay, I'm walking around. I'm actually down in a pub having a bite to eat. So I snuck out to the car for this phone call.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone who doesn't know me wouldn't know there's anything wrong with me.
Okay.
My friends know what's missing, but I'm no less of a man than I was before. There's no difference, because that part of my anatomy didn't make a difference to them. Okay, it really didn't make a difference to them one way or the other. So like. Yes, I can see how some people will go, ew, I couldn't take that, ew, I wouldn't like that. But if given the choice I was faced with, it's not a choice. I mean, it really isn't a choice. You'll find out if you happen to be in the position. Life is very, very precious.
Okay,
stay
with us, Peter. And I've more questions. The brilliant thing about you as an interviewee, you're answering most of the questions before I even ask them. So please stay with us. 51551 is the text number. Joe@rte.ie and 0818 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, Peter Robbie contacted us, joe@rte.ie, about, and this has happened quite recently, isn't it? The operation to remove your penis took place, 4 weeks ago, Peter?
20th of May.
Wow.
20th of May. I was discharged on the 29th, so I've been out and about since then.
And when you were told that this was the least thing they were going to do, you were told that they might have to take much more, but unfortunately they didn't. Did you immediately go to Dr. Google and look up what happens after you have your penis
amputated? The only Googling I did, because I've been warned by a lot of people, don't go to Google, because Google, it throws up everything from the very worst to the very best, to the complete sort of, I don't know, you can go to the quacks as well. So there's an awful lot of stuff there. What I did do is, when Hubert Gallagher had said he was sending me to Ivor Cullen, I did have a look at Ivor Cullen and look at him and look at what he'd done. And I was satisfied that he is the man for this kind of job. He is the expert. And on that, it seems to me, mm-hmm. I was speaking with Alison Doran, who's my contact nurse. She works with Ivor. And only a week or two ago, I was speaking to her. And I was asking her how busy they are. And that they're extremely busy. They've been getting all the referrals around Dublin for quite some time to the Beaumont. But now, because this is becoming a little better known, they're getting referrals from all over the country. And my feeling is, now, again, I could be wrong on this, but I would reckon that department, that team, is very small for the amount of referrals they're going to get. So I sincerely hope that somebody puts money into this, because you don't have an option. You know, it really, it's you're going to get that done. And one thing I didn't say, when I was on the slab, should we say, when I was on the trolley waiting to go into the operating theatre, and I was in the gown that had no arse on it, you know, the thing that
removes
all your dignity, when you're trying to fasten yourself. Anyway, I was lying there and I'd said goodbye to Nora. I'd given her a hug and I said, I'll see you on the other side. And I went in and the surgeons came in and they said, look, you'd realise we might have to scoop out an awful lot more. And because of that, we're going to give you an epidural, which I didn't like. I don't like that kind of thing into your spine. But anyway, that was done. And I can remember I suddenly had a pang, and it was the only time, I think, that I felt a bit nervous. And it wasn't nervous for me, because if you're going to pass away, if you pass away in the operating theatre, you know nothing about it. You know, you just, one minute you're there, one minute you're not, and whatever happens next, or if there's nothing, there's nothing. But I suddenly realised, I'd sort of said, I'd been very blasé with Nora. I just said, look, you know, yes, everything's going to be fine, see you on the other side. So I can remember saying to the surgeons, look, am I going to survive this operation? Because I suddenly thought, you know, leaving your loved ones with just a hug and a kind of cheerio, you know, very blasé. I said, that's not suitable, because we hadn't really talked about it before, because I'd been positive.
Well, everything happened so quickly as well, Peter.
It did happen so quickly, but the surgeon was brilliant. And I can't remember whether it was Ken or whether it was Ivor, but one of them said, no, don't worry.
There's lots of things echoing. One is, when you said to him, is it survivable? Mm-hmm. And he knew you could take a straight mm-hmm. question, straight answer. And he said, candidly, I don't know. I don't know.
And I mean, that's the kind of answer that straight away, you know where you stand. You know what box you're in. And so we knew straight away this was extremely serious. And then he explained, when I said, look, is there a plan? He said, yes. Now, that's the yes means that there is a plan. Now, I don't know long term. I'm seeing him in July. I assume then there's going to be a battery of tests and scans. I don't know.
Okay.
And probably some kind of radio or chemo. We'll handle that. That's a plan. That's in the future.
Okay. Stay with us, Peter. 51551 is our text number. Paddy Archibald. Paddy, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe?
You're listening to Peter being extraordinarily straightforward and clear about what happened. What happened in your case, Paddy?
Well, I was misdiagnosed for a few months, and basically until 2012. And when I got to the doctors anyway in Beaumont, my cancer had gone a good bit into the penis, and they had to remove the whole lot. And I was given literally a day to get it done, and like, didn't have time to think and the whole lot. But when the doctor told me, he says, basically what he said to me was, he says, I'm going to do this now for you. He says, but down the road, there's reconstruction and different stuff. So when I heard that, I didn't mind it getting done, because I thought there's still a bit of hope. So because I like football and I like playing golf and things like that. And I thought, how am I going to go? The biggest problem in my head was thinking of going to the toilet, or, you know, you go to Croke Park on a busy Sunday, you can't get to the cubicle. And the one thing, that's why I called in there, because the one thing that I found hard was I had no one else to talk to about it, because I used to go to the cancer meetings. But I was talking to a lady or something who might have breast cancer, but I had these other issues. And eventually, after a few years, I went to a doctor in London, and I actually got penile reconstruction.
Okay.
Where they basically take the skin from skin graft from your hand and make a new one. I made my life a lot easier, if you want to call it.
Okay. And and when you say easier, I'm going on what you've told me about, which is something I'll ask Peter about in a minute. When you go to use the loo and it's in a man's public toilet, it's all urinals, you're in full view, so to speak. Is that what you can do now?
Oh, yeah. I can stand up like normal person.
Okay.
And, now, there's a few issues since then, but it's a lot easier. Like, at the start, it's horrible because you're going into toilets that are disgusting and you're trying to sit down and, you know, so just tell that man that there's loads of stuff out there now. And even in the 10 or 11 years that I've had it, they're a lot more advanced, because where penile cancer, I actually went down a few times to talk about it because I wanted other people to know that there is hope out there for you.
Yeah.
And it's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, it's only a part of your body.
Yeah. And Paddy, what were your symptoms?
Basically, I just had a little pimple on the top of it.
Yeah.
And when I went to numerous doctors, and they kept telling me there was nothing wrong. And I knew there was something wrong because I was passing blood. Now, most fellas would be embarrassed about things like that. I was very open about it.
Okay.
And it probably stood to me, because luckily for me, the cancer didn't get into my body, so I didn't need to get chemo or anything like that.
And was the pimple on the top of your penis, was it itchy or was it angry? Was there anything to make you worry about it?
Basically, what happened was when I pee, it would bleed a little bit afterwards, which was unusual.
Yeah.
Normally, the blood would be in your urine, but mine came afterwards.
So when you went for, which is totally understandable, when you went for the initial test, what your medics thought it might be prostate cancer, I presume.
No, they basically didn't. I went to a couple of doctors and they didn't say there was anything. They didn't really know. It was 11 years, as I said, it was 11, 12 years ago. It was actually 2012.
And what age were you then, Paddy?
I was 49.
A very young man,
Now,
say with us, Paddy, because you're prompting now the next question to Peter. 51551 is the text number. Peter, how do you manage to pee at the moment? How is that organised?
Well, funnily enough, Paddy mentioned Croke Park. After I came out, before the operation, after I'd come out from the Beacon, when I had the catheter, so I had a tube down my penis into my bladder to a little bag on my leg, which was uncomfortable but manageable, except I had tickets to go to the Leinster semi-final in Croke Park. I'd managed to glean these four tickets. So myself, my wife, my brother and a friend went to it. So we had to walk with the mass of humanity, which was a bit uncomfortable. But luckily, I think God or the supreme being was looking after us, because the seats we bought right behind us, like about 15 yards away, was a set of disabled loos.
Okay.
And I now have a disability.
Okay.
It's an invisible disability, but I have a disability, so I would tend to go to a disabled loo.
Okay.
Now, if I have to go to a loo, I have the choice. I can choose to have what's called a flip flow, which from this tube in my tummy, I can have a little tap on it, which is strapped to my thigh. And all I've got to do is at the one zip, point this flap and turn the button. So I can empty out almost as normal, a bit of a palaver, but almost as normal. Or I can have, as I have on today, I have a little bag strapped to my calf.
Okay.
And the tube is constantly going into that. So again, if I go to the loo, really, I just put my foot up on the loo and turn this tap. So it's not that much of a problem.
And Peter, when do you know when you need to do a pee?
That is something I'm coming to terms with.
Okay.
And that's funnily enough why I have the bag on today.
Okay.
Because they did say in the hospital, every 3 hours or so, just go to the loo and turn the tap. But of course, it depends on how much you drink. At the moment. I'm trying to train my bladder, but at the moment, I'm not getting any signals. I don't feel full. Now, I'm sure that will come. And the only, I suppose, the only negative I've got at the moment, and again, one of the reasons why I've put this little bag on today, is that when I pee, when I go to the loo and I point my little pipe down the loo and I turn the tap, it comes out. Everything comes out. Mm. Everything's fine. But right at the end, that last drop, I get an almost imperceptible, and I won't call it a sting. It's like a little electric shock. The tiny, tiny, tiny thing. It's insignificant, except I know it's coming. So I tend to pee gritting my teeth, waiting for this little flick, you know, this little thing, but it's stupid.
Does that allow you to use a urinal, which is in most men's?
I wouldn't feel comfortable using a urinal purely, and it's more from the point of view of getting some kind of infection.
That's why one of the things I'm thinking from what you said, you had to go into a disabled loo because it's not a urinal, basically. It's a proper toilet. And I just hope, I know people can be very judgmental, but I just hope when people see other men or indeed women coming out of a disabled loo, and they don't look like they have a noticeable physical. There is, I presume most people who use a disabled loo use it because they have to. So just we bear that in mind. We don't
there's
know.
There's always what, going to be, there's always going to be the gouger who takes the shortcut. I'm only popping in. But certainly in Croke Park, because I didn't look like I had a disability, I went up to one of the people who was patrolling outside to keep the gougers out. And I just said, look, I have an invisible disability. I pointed to this tube and I said, look, that's what I've got. But I wouldn't be above, if somebody attacked me, I wouldn't be above showing them and saying, look, now, heck off. You know, I mean, I've no problem with that.
Say what is. Paddy, I'll come back to you in a few minutes as well, please. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 and 0818 715 815. Pádraig is in Kildare. Pádraig, you're listening to Peter and to Paddy. What happened in your case, Pádraig?
Well, the hair was rising on my back of my neck, Joe, listening to Peter, because I remember the day that happened to me. Mm. What happened to me, Joe, I'm actually delighted listening to the lads. I got cancer in South Africa. And I got a pain in my tummy. I was nauseous. My wife brought me to a private A&E. They carried out an ultrasound and told me I had gallstones. So they admitted me on the spot and removed my gallbladder the next morning. I woke up the next morning to be told, this is Conway Moolman. He's your urologist. And I didn't know what a urologist was, Joe. So he said to me, look, he said, you have a large malignant tumor in your right kidney. I said, oh, my God. And he says, he said, the only thing that's keeping it intact is the membrane. He says, I need to get it out. He says, so I'm giving you 1 week to recover from your surgery and come back in and remove your kidney, and then you take it from there. So when I went home, recovered from the gallbladder, went back in and had my kidney out. I really thought it was a serious procedure, Joe, and I was feeling sorry for myself. But I'm in this system, and every 6 weeks, I have to go back and see him, and I'm doing a list of the various problems I have with me. And on one of these visits, I had my list, and whatever was on the list prompted him to bring me in and put a camera down the penis. And it went down so far, John, it wouldn't go any further. So he actually said to me, he said, if there's a blockage there, he said, and the only way I'm going to be able to determine what it is through a general anaesthetic. So he did the general anaesthetic, and I woke up to be told that I had thousands of miniature tumors in my urethra. And there was an international convention of urologists and oncologists in Cape Town that summer, and he asked my permission to bring my file. And he brought it back and said, this is what they told me to do, which is basically to remove my urethra in its entirety, which rendered my prostate and my bladder superfluous to requirements. So they were removed as well, as were my lymph nodes. And they gave me a stoma and a urostomy bag. Now, my fear, like Peter's, was how am I going to function after this? Like, my joys in life are my family and my golf and the outdoor life. I didn't think I'd be able to swing a golf club. But Joe, as God is my judge, I was 9 before my surgery. I was 6 post-surgery. Right? So life does go on. And it's really interesting that I had, after my kidney was removed, I had the catheter and the bag down my leg. Mm-hmm. And Joe, I hated it with a passion. It was only for a couple of weeks. But like the bag, Joe, I got so used to it, second nature to me. The only time I have any issues actually is when I'm traveling through an airport. I have huge advantages over people in that I put my hand on my side, I feel my bag, it's either empty or it's full. And at night time, if I choose to, I can connect it to an overnight bag, which will hold more urine than I'll express in 24 hours.
Okay.
And where I had a big difficulty, Joe, was trying to get my hydration levels right, because I was getting conflicting information from lots of different people. And I finally decided I was going to put my faith in my urologist, who basically told me that I had to balance keeping my body hydrated with not overworking my one remaining kidney. That makes sense to you, you know?
I'll take a break, Park, one, because your line's a little bit fuzzy on my ear anyway, and I want, it's so important what you're saying. I want a bit more clarity if we can get it in it. Peter, stay with us. Paddy, in your case, you talked about the reconstruction of your penis.
Yeah.
Now, how daunting is that for you? How?
Well, I think I had 5 operations. I had to go to London.
Okay.
There's a guy over there that does that. Basically, what he does, fellas or women who get sex changed, and fellas who a lot of guys he used was guys who were, say, in the war and that got blown away. So basically what he did to me was he took the skin graft from my arm, the arteries and the nerves and the whole lot, basically roping and rude, he rolled it up and attached it to me. Now it was a 10-hour operation, and I ended up having to have 5 because it was in different stages.
5 operations,
Yeah, 5. We're big enough now, like 5 or 6 hours. But like they've done this. I actually saw it on Embarrassing Bodies, is where I saw it.
Okay.
How it could be done. There was a program. Actually, a friend of mine saw it on the television one time.
I told you.
Basically, they done that. That was 2016. And now, listen, it's not perfect, but it's a lot better. I can go into the bathrooms now and stand up. Like,
and Paddy, how many operations to reconstruct your penis so far?
Well, I've had a few complications and all that, I've probably had about 30 surgeries since the cancer. Now, some of them are only like daytime, you go in the morning, home that evening.
And who pays for this? I'm conscious, and I'll ask Peter as well. Like, but are you covered by?
Well, believe it or not, the people where I come from raised the money to send me to London.
Wow.
My friends and all that raised it. At the time, I couldn't wait for you can go on the HSE waiting list.
Okay,
but it takes a while. But
stay with us, Pat. And Peter, in your case, paying for all of this.
I'm very lucky. I have the VHI.
Okay.
I have a health insurance. Now, as Alison explained to me, because I was trying to figure out, I said, I asked her the last time I was with her, I said, am I a public patient or a private patient?
Yeah.
And she said, you're a private patient in a public hospital,
okay,
which means essentially you get no frills, but you get the job done.
Okay.
But that said, listen, I was very lucky. When I came out of surgery, I was up in the transplant ward, which in Beaumont, it's like the penthouse. It was good as any hospital I've ever been in, and the staff were magnificent.
Rightly so.
But it's VHI, thank God.
Okay, stay with us. Peter, Robbie, Paddy Archibald and Paul. Joe at RT.ie, 51551 is our text number if you want to participate. And 0818 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
In case you've just tuned in, we are talking about a very sensitive issue, but as you can hear, a very, very important issue, especially for men, but also for the wider population. Not necessarily suitable at this stage for very young years, I'm thinking primary school. 51551 if you want to participate, 0818 715 815, or joe@rte.ie. And what we're talking to is about men. It was prompted by a call from Peter Robbie, who in the last 4 weeks had his penis amputated in a surgery because he had cancer of the urethra. Porrick is back. Porrick, how are we being straight? And by the way, don't be embarrassed, or don't think you're... I know someone said...
I'd be very straight with you, Joe.
Yeah.
When my urethra was removed, the pain that emanated from my penis for 6 months afterwards while it was healing was absolutely horrific. Okay. Right? And my during that period, the last thing that was on my mind was sex. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
But my urologist did tell me that he'd get me functioning again, right? Okay. When the time was right. And he, and in fairness, Joe, he did.
Okay.
Right? But it took the spontaneity out of it, right? He put me in touch with this lab, and they basically make up a potion which you inject into your penis. Right?
Okay.
And the pain of doing it, Joe, outweighs the pleasure you get. That's the best way I can put it.
Okay.
Like, I couldn't, today, thinking about it, I tried all the other things. He told me I was wasting my time, that the nerve damage that had occurred in my prostate was unavoidable. Like, without being crude about it, Joe, they basically slice you, pull it out like a chicken fillet, and stitch you up. Now, what's really interesting is that one of my best friends in South Africa had exactly the same problem as me in late 2019, and I recommended he go to my guy, which he did.
Yeah.
And at this stage, that man had, where it took me, Joe, 2 weeks to be able to stand. My friend walked out of hospital the day after his surgery. It's robotic surgery now, where they emulsify your prostate and they remove the emulsified piece, leaving the nerves and the membrane intact. So a week after his surgery, he was playing golf, and 2 weeks afterwards, his sex life was back to normal. You know, like, that's the advancement in medical science over the last 8 years.
And how much of your penis was remaining after the operation, Borick?
All of my penis was remaining after the operation, with the sole exception of my urethra, which is the...
So it was flaccid, to say. Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Apparently,
yes.
Just on some stats, as far as we can find them, these are 2015 figures worked through in a 2022 study in Ireland. 25% of people treated for penile cancer, six men per year receive a total penectomy. In other words, their total penis is amputated, as in Peter's case. And 50%, which is 12, have a partial amputation. Paddy, in your case, does the penile reconstruction that you've been through, 30 operations, where does that leave you in terms of what Porrick was just talking about there, your sex life?
Well, you know, the mine has a pump.
Okay.
It's a pump that's in your testicles.
All right.
And you can pump her up. Basically, that's how that works.
Okay, and it does work in that sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Christina, 51551, joe@rt.ie, a female voice for a sec. Christina, you're listening to Peter, Paddy and Porrick.
Hi, Joe. Yes, I am indeed. Yes, I am. I just had to ring in because I find it absolutely inspiring that those men are actually on the radio talking to you about the particular problems that they have gone through. And hopefully, you know, they're speaking about a subject which I would imagine is taboo for a lot of men.
Mm-hmm.
But if it just helps one man, you know, listening to their experiences, it helps just one man to seek that medical help that they need. I'm finding their talk, as I said, absolutely inspiring, absolutely inspiring. And my hat, I take my hat off to them for their courage and their frankness and honesty in coming on the onto the radio station and speaking to us. Absolutely marvellous.
And then, well, in one sense, Christina, women have led the way over the years in talking about breast cancer, especially, and being so forthright about it and explaining, and they're doing it, as Peter said in his initial comments at 1:45, they're doing it to try and help others. They did it on this programme 2 years ago now about the menopause, and they're, again, they're doing it to try and help other people. Stay there for a sec, Christina. Peter and Paddy and Porrig, we'll go to Peter first. Peter, I mentioned to you, would you say it to your mates? Do your female friends know? Not that they need to, said you.
Some of them do. They probably will now.
Okay,
but again, most good friends are just worried about you.
Yeah, okay.
But my feeling is, I mean, one of the reasons I'm able to get through this is because a sense of humour doesn't leave you. And it strikes me that listening to the two other guys, and I suddenly realise we're the three P's, which is a strange thing anyway, given what's wrong with us.
Peter, Paddy and Parry, yeah, the three P's, yeah.
But you need a sense of humour. Now, I decided early on, once I knew I had this tumour, I gave it a name, because I said, if it's a thing, if it's within inside me, it's easier for me to imagine it as a thing. So I called it Franklin, because of Aretha Franklin. I thought that was a nice, easy one. So Franklin was part of me for a short time, but it helped me visualise it. And now I can visualise that Franklin is gone. Now, that poor guy, was it Porrig, the guy who still has the penis? They took the urethra out and left the penis.
That's Paddy, yeah.
Paddy. It strikes me that Paddy, compared to certainly me, Paddy's, he's been through the mill, because that to me, I'll be honest, I would prefer to get rid of the damn thing.
Okay, now it's Porrig that used that chicken description. He had cancer of the urethra. They removed the urethra, but they left his penis. So you can see, Porrig explained it in brilliantly in great sensitivity as well. So Peter, just come back to me again. You called your tumour Franklin. Because of Aretha Franklin.
Aretha Franklin, yeah.
The singer, Aretha Franklin.
No, Aretha.
Okay. Are you available on Friday to go to the Vatican with those comedians?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm a lapsed Protestant, but yes, send me. But well, one thing I'd say, Joe, because I'm going to have to run away now, because I've got to go and get my dressing changed. But can I say, first of all, thank you for letting us on.
Thank you.
Because it's important. And would you thank the two other gentlemen? Because
that's
the kind of thing you,
Paddy
you
and
suddenly
Parik,
realize that you're now in a club. You're not on your own. There are other people dotted around who have similar.
And Peter, remember Paddy, and to give credit to Paddy. Paddy, one of Paddy's opening lines in his text here is, "I want to give Peter hope." There is he had, as you know, reconstruction a lot, but he wants on the one hand, you're so upbeat and so candid and so sensitive as well about describing it. But what you say, you go back now for what, monthly tests or updates or checkups?
I really don't know. That's in the future, because now once this wound, and the wound's pretty horrific, once that heals up, my next port of call will be to Ivor Cullen in July. I think it's about the 20-somethings of July. Now, I should imagine at that stage he will have looked at all the results. We'll probably have to do a lot of tests and scans, and then he will decide whether there's radio or chemo. Now, I believe the squamous cells, which are the cells that make up the bladder, the urethra, and the penis, I believe they don't respond particularly well to, I think it's either radio or chemo, but I'm sure there'll be a plan put in place. But the most important thing for me is now there is time for a plan to be put in space, into place. So at least there's this, as I say, this line heading from me into the future, which is there, which might not have been. And that's the important thing. Go to the doctor, chaps.
And Peter, finally, because you mentioned her so lovingly, Nora, your wife, how is she doing?
She is, now, she's possibly listening, so I have to be a bit careful. She's doing extremely well, but I would suggest she might be hanging on by her fingertips. Now, we've been in touch with the cancer support, and she has, she's going to talk to somebody, that there's somebody she can talk to.
Okay.
So hopefully that'll be all right. But as I keep telling her, you know, I sit her down and I say, look, Nora, you know, I'm here. I don't plan on going anywhere. The guys have given me a chance. Mm-hmm.
the option or the alternative could have been so much worse. Yeah, so let's just focus on the positives. Yeah. Positive energy never hurt anybody.
Okay,
she's doing great and she is my soulmate.
But when you
and
say
she's
just
listening, Nora, I love you.
You'll have us. You'll have us all in tears, Peter. Would you? That phrase you just clarify for Nora's sake that she's hanging on for her fingertips. You mean she's been through an awful lot?
She's been, you see,
stress-wise, worry-wise.
When we sat in Ivor Cullen's office on the 10th of May, she really thought he was going to say, it's a polyp or something, we'll just go through, we'll laser it off, we'll do whatever, blah, 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 blah. So she was kind of blasé sitting there with a slight smile on her face, looking at her husband who was possibly exaggerating, you see. But when he came out and he said, this is extremely serious, I don't know whether it's survivable, what we're going to have to do is this, that and that hit her full in the face like a wet fish. I had listened to what Hubert had said. And Hubert Gallagher, because he'd said, look, I've never seen one of these, I'm going to put you onto Ivor Cullen. And I'd Googled Ivor Cullen. So there was a little inkling in the back of my mind that things might not be 100%. Poor old Nora got it. Bang. And she's been dealing with that. Now, she's brilliant. She looks after me. She bullies me. She makes sure I do this and I do that and they do the other. So she is fantastic. And I'll keep an eye on her. And we'll go to the counsellor and we'll get through this. There is great support by all accounts. The counsellor support apparently is fantastic. So we'll look out. But to know that I'm in a little club now and that there are people so dotted around the country.
Three P's so far,
brilliant. Three P's so far.
Yeah. Okay, Peter, will you go back into Nora, please?
I will go back into Nora now.
Thank
and
you.
I shall go and get my bandage changed. But listen, Joe, once again, thank you so much for giving us the opportunity. We'll talk again.
Thanks very much, Peter Robbie. Stay with us. I want to ask a few more questions to Paddy and Pádraig after this break. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, Paddy Archibald. Paddy, the people around you and in your life, as Peter was talking about, how are they? How have they managed it?
I mean, your surgeon is one thing, and my surgeon was unbelievable. But half of the thing is only the physical part what he could do to me.
Yeah.
The chats I had with him, because it's devastating news to hear when you find out. Oh, it's great. Listen, it's great to be alive, but then you want to live again, and that's what the doctor said. I said to the doctor after I had the amputation. I said, "This is great. I'm alive now." I said, "But I want to live again. I want to have a quality of life."
Yeah.
And because I had nothing, I had to go into cubicles, and the cubicles were disgusting, as I said. And the doctor turned around and he said to me, "He says there's loads of stuff that can be done." Mm-hmm. Gave me all of these alternate, and straight away, even though it might not have happened, I felt great that there was a bit of hope, there was light at the end of the tunnel. My wife, it was unbelievable. We've been to London probably 30, 40 times for checkups and this, that, and the other, and she's been beside me every minute of the way she's been there. I didn't, Peter, I saw people around here starting you with me. I didn't tell my two sons at the time because I have twin boys, but they were doing their exams. I can't remember what they were doing. So I kept that away. I probably only told them I think it's Jordan Cove. It was only when I really told them about it. The one thing I found, thing I found really hard at the time was not being able to talk to somebody else that was going through the same thing. The things that were annoying me, I used to have to bring spare pants with me, spare underwear. I'd always have to, first thing I'd do when I go anywhere would be see where the toilet is. I felt there were only little things, but they were getting me all uptight.
Okay.
And that's the reason why when I heard that man there saying, I said, listen, I'm only going through this 11 years ago. When I got sick, since then I've lost my best friend, my brother, and my father to cancer, and they were worried about me, and I'm still here.
Yeah.
And you have to stay positive.
Yeah, well said, Paddy. And Paddy and Pádraig, which one of you said the 6 months of pain when do you read?
Me.
That was you, Paddy.
No, me, no.
Pádraig. And Padraig, yeah. when men hear that, especially, one, was there any pain relief?
There was, Joe, but it wasn't adequate. Okay. I suppose, Joe, unlike the two guys, I had one significant advantage. One of my uncles, who was a widower, and God be good to him, he also buried two kids.
Okay.
And I saw that man with that. He got his stoma 2 years before I did. He also had diabetes, heart condition, Joe. And I'm looking at that man on his own, coping with that, where I had a wonderful wife. And the downside, Joe, to having your ostomy bag was it took a bit of getting used to.
Mm-hmm.
And like my poor wife, God love her, on multiple occasions in the early years would end up swimming in my urine in bed. Yeah. And we got through it, Joe.
Yeah.
Right? And like now it's down to maybe once a year you might have a little accident, but like you adjust. You know, like Paddy said, I buried my best friend, I buried one of my cousins, and I buried one of my brother-in-laws from cancer. We were all there to support me when I got it, Joe, you know.
And what would you say to men, Padraig? One, I'm thinking of that.
Say, well, the first thing I'd say, Joe, is that I understand now why kidney cancer is called the silent killer, because my urologist told me that if I hadn't had gallstones, Joe, they would never have discovered my kidney. And it was pressed against the membrane. That would have got it into all of my organs. I'd have been dead by Christmas.
Yeah.
And he told me that the only other person with kidney cancer he'd had in the previous year who'd survived, okay, had been the victim of a very serious road traffic accident. I was brought in and they did an MRI on her to see the extent of her injuries and packed all the injuries and removed her kidney.
Yeah, I did. I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago, Padraig and Paddy, but for some reason I did a little course online about not the fatalities of World War One, but the men, primarily men, obviously, who were injured and there was 10 million injured who obviously went back to Germany and France and the UK. And obviously some of their injuries, Given the nature of that war, and indeed every war, some of them involved the penis and the testicles, and it was just, and other parts, but it was just horrific to read about them, and because it was never spoken about, and obviously reconstruction of the face, and just. But anyway, I think it's.
I'll tell you the biggest challenge I've had.
Padraig, yeah.
I still play golf. I had spinal surgery, so don't play as well as I used to. And in the 10 years I've had my bag, Joe, and I'm quite a confident fella, I've never, ever been able to convince myself to walk across the dressing room in the golf club and go in and have a shower. I never have a problem going to the bathroom, Joe, and to the urinal.
But you wouldn't have a shower in front of other men?
I won't have a shower in front of other men. And the other problem I had, though, and I know others have had this problem as well, is when I first got the stoma, I hated it with a passion. I couldn't get my head around it. I didn't want to look at it. I didn't want to touch it. I didn't want to clean it, right?
But I
finally got my head around it. That's what was keeping me alive, you know?
Okay. And Paddy, can I ask you the same question that Padraig just prompted? Would you shower in front of other men in a dressing room, in a gym or whatever?
When I had the bag, probably not.
Okay.
I don't have the bag anymore.
Okay.
I have I'm not perfect, but I'm a lot better than what I was. Now, I don't know how long it's going to take, but just one thing I want to say to people
please
do not be afraid to go to your doctor about it. It's only a part of your body. At the end of the day, all men have one, or most of us have one,
you know what I mean? Yeah, yeah.
It's come a lot more, when I heard of a force, or I was the first one I ever heard of, and since then I know of about five or six people have had it. So it's become a bit more frequent. I don't know what reason it's for it, but I know a good few people, and I've spoke to a few people about it, and they were delighted that they were able to speak to me about it, because the things that were annoying them had annoyed me beforehand. And I think that I actually tried to get on. I tried to talk to some some charities to say that if there was anyone that would want to talk to me about this to make them feel better or to let them know what's going ahead. But because I wasn't qualified or I didn't do as someone called, you need to be, I don't know what's the word I want to say, but basically you wouldn't let me speak to anyone for maybe privacy reasons or whatever. But I definitely think that when people get talking to somebody else about this, it takes a load off your mind.
And again,
One of the things I did, I have done since I returned home, is I've become a volunteer driver with the Irish Cancer Society.
Well done,
I recommend that to any cancer survivor, right? Or anyone who's lost someone to cancer. It's the most fulfilling few hours you can spend every day, Joe.
Yeah.
Right, and I mean, one thing for certain, when you come home, you don't think twice about getting down on your knees and counting your blessings, you know.
Paddy Archibald and Pádraig as well. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, and the reaction to
Joe,
to your candor and beginning with Peter there over an hour ago, an hour and 5 minutes ago is very, very reassuring. And again, the figures, insofar as we know, are. And I'll give them out again, but and in one sense, there's no point in me saying, well, only 6 men a year have full penile amputation, but for the likes of Peter Robbie, he's 100% of that. He's one of that six, and that's why he wanted to talk and remind men. Obviously, any difference when you pee, blood, any discharge, and in the other cases there, any sign of a sore or a pimple or whatever, don't ignore. There's no who said earlier. I think it was Peter who said, listen, if you have to pay to go to the doctor, which of course most people have, it's less than the price of a meal if you can, and hopefully for people who are working through the public system, this will encourage them not to give up, and indeed those in the public system who are brilliant to realise the issue that it is. 25% of people treated for penile cancer, that's 6 per year, so it's 24 people a year are treated for penile cancer. 6 receive a total penectomy, and 50% of those, that's 12 of those people, receive a partial penectomy. Joe@rte.ie, 51551 is our text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Just some of the reaction. Peter, Pádraig and Paddy, the three P's, as Peter Robbie christened the trio. So brave, so right to tell men not to let things go or to think it is nothing. I lost my husband to a brain tumour, and the only symptoms he had were bad headaches 3 weeks before the diagnosis of grade 4 tumour. I often wonder, did my poor husband have any other symptoms before those bad headaches started? Peter, Pádraig and Paddy are doing a brilliant service. I've just gone, brilliant, to get my blood PSA tests with my doctor. A big thank you for Peter for sharing his experience. This is obviously someone who knows Peter, though I think we all know him a lot more in the last hour. This is so typical of Peter Robbie, one of the nicest men in the world, sharing his personal trauma as a warning for the benefit of everyone else. Thank you so much, Peter. And it just goes on. Peter is doing a service to everyone in Ireland, not just the men. What an articulate and pragmatic person. Pragmatic person Peter, pragmatic person Pádraig, and pragmatic person Paddy. Well done, both in relation to this particular health issue and any very serious issue that people listening will unexpectedly face in the next few months to come. And that's just a tenor of the reaction from people. Just before we found, a little bit of good news to finish. It's Father's Day next Sunday, isn't it? I don't know whether people believe it or not, but maybe one of the things you will say to your dad or your brother or your uncle, don't be afraid to say it, were you listening to Liveline earlier on in the week, make sure And it's very straightforward. Make sure the next time you go to your GP, you ask for the prostate test, and also make sure if you have any other issues down below, as you say, don't be afraid. That'd be a great Father's Day present. Well, let me go to Noel Welsh. Noel, what happened? Quickly, it's a good news story to finish. Well, by the way, in fairness, I think that three lads, Powerig, Peter and Paddy, I know was a very, very heavy topic to begin with, but they just delivered, as they went through their stories, they delivered a lot of news to a lot of men, and hopefully that will be good in the long term. Okay, what happened in your case, Noel? You bought a voucher, somebody bought a voucher, or a gift card. Was it for Father's Day or for Christmas or whatever?
Good afternoon, Joe. And on a totally different subject. Yeah. Thanks for having me on. It was my son, his wife and grandchildren brought me a gift voucher, Ryanair gift voucher, okay, for Christmas, which I was going to use in the last 2 weeks.
All right.
But unfortunately, when I went to book the holiday on it, I used the voucher code, which was grand, but on the card it says to Mom, Dad, Welsh. And Ryanair don't recognise that as a real passenger name, so they wouldn't honour the voucher for €100.
Okay.
So I had been onto them on a few occasions, and they said they can only change two letters. Now, a good example of that was, we say I bought a voucher for my next door neighbour, who is Phil Walsh, and on her passport might be Philomena Walsh. So they wouldn't be able to honour that, because the name on the gift card must correspond with the name on the passport of the person you're giving it to. So it's just a warning, really, for people that are buying gift cards, maybe coming up now for Father's Day on Sunday, or maybe future in the field for birthdays, anniversaries, or even Christmas Day at the end of the year.
Okay, so just to be clear, when you buy a gift card with Ryanair, the gift card isn't an ID. But Ryanair is saying that the name on the gift card must match exactly the name on the passport of the person you were giving the gift card to.
Exactly, which I think is absolutely crazy, because the most important thing on a gift card is the gift card code, which is a very long number. So when people are putting these on, like grandchildren now, they were putting out to be nice to put Mom, Dad, Welsh, W-E-L-C-H, but they didn't read down through all the policy, which says it must match the actual name on the passport. Now, if you're buying a gift for somebody, you want to give it as a surprise. You're not going to ask them in advance, can I have what exactly is on your passport?
Yeah, but it's the number on the gift card that validates, that proves that somebody has bought, somebody has given £100 to Ryanair. Isn't that it? Okay, it's the number. It's not the name, it's the number. And the gift card, you don't present the gift card at the boarding gate to get on the plane.
You don't.
So it's not we have a statement from Ryanair. This voucher was purchased under an incorrect name, Mom, Dad, Welsh.
Yeah.
On the 9th of December 2023, Ms. Noel Welsh contacted customer service and last week to request a name change to Noel Welsh. This name change has been actioned and issued to a new email address by the person who made the original. So, but just to be clear, they say they've now changed it. But just to be clear, before we contact, the original contact from Ryanair said we can change how many letters in Mom, Dad?
Two letters. They can change two letters in a name.
Okay. And there's no way.
I think even
the greatest amigramist, crosshair, simplex, code word, a Scrabble person cannot get Noel out of Mom, Dad, so to speak.
Exactly. And I just did an experiment recently where I tried to purchase a gift card and I put down two Mickey Mouse from Donald Duck. Right. And it was accepting my money before I actually put my credit card in. So it accept any name you want to put on it, but when you go to use it afterwards, they say null and void.
But doesn't it take, if you say I want to buy my dad whatever, a gift card for Father's Day, you have to go, because I think 50% of passports, the name is slightly different to John, Joseph, or Joe, or Jay, or whatever, JJ. You have to go to the person to whom you wish to surprise and say, "You can I see your passport?"
Yeah, it sounds crazy.
Okay, where's Margaret? Margaret,
crazy.
Margaret O'Sullivan, quick, Margaret.
Hello, yeah, Margaret O'Sullivan is exactly Margaret O'Sullivan on the gift card.
Yes,
Joe.
Yes.
And Margaret O'Sullivan on the booking.
Yes.
And Margaret O'Sullivan is doing the booking.
Yes.
And the voucher was €250.
Yes.
I was allowed to use €97 of it in March 2020.
Okay.
The voucher is now due to expire in January of next year.
Yes.
And I have used made multiple efforts ringing them.
And what's the problem? What's the problem, Margaret, with the Ryanair voucher?
They keep telling me the name on the voucher must match the passenger on the trip.
But it does, doesn't it?
And it does not matches it identically. Now, we have tried something like, you know, the apostrophe in O'Sullivan.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
We've tried taking out the apostrophe and putting in the apostrophe.
Okay.
And taking out and tried everything.
And possibly. you can't get anywhere, so to speak. Pardon
can't get anywhere. After
okay, all, Charlie. Stay there, Margaret in Cork. Charlie.
Hello, Joe.
What happened? Ryanair voucher. Quick, they're pouring in now. What happened?
Echo exactly what that woman is saying. They got two vouchers, one for 200, one for 100. Tried to use them numerous times. You just get angry trying to use them and you start losing the will to live and you just give up on them, you know?
And how much have you lost?
300, Joe, 300.
Determined to try
different browsers, tried to use the app, tried to use different phones, different laptops, not in work, Joe.
Charlie, what is the problem?
I put in the name exactly as it on the voucher, put in the number exactly on the voucher. It's not rocket science.
Maybe it was booked under Charles or Charlie or Chaz.
No, exactly what the voucher was booked in, I put in. And I tried, one voucher is by my wife's name, Martina, and I put that in and it just will not accept it.
Well, could Ryanair cancel them and just refund the money and be done with it?
I said, could you cancel the two vouchers? They recognise the vouchers are valid. I said, cancel them two vouchers and give me a voucher for 300. No, we can't do that, sorry. So, I don't know, Joe. Look, I'm not losing sleep over it, but it's just kind of annoying.
Hang on, 300 quid is 300 quid.
I know.
Come on. Okay,
so
Charlie.
When I heard you were talking about it, I'd give you a ring.
Okay, Charlie, Margaret. And Margaret, you sure Margaret O'Sullivan is your real name, Margaret?
Yes, okay.
And Noel Welch, you're sure Noel Welch is your real name?
It certainly is. N-O-E-L-W-E-L-C-H.
And Margaret, you think it might be the apostrophe on the O. I wonder if Michael O'Leary ever encountered that problem. I'm on sound, Chris O'Connor. Brock, Chris O'Connor, broadcast coordinator Shane Gabb, producer Sean O'Gorman, and Catherine Thomas is next.